At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at bragworthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This is Danny and Dusty.
Meringue-a-tang is going to be a thing.
You're not coining anything new.
With Danny Meringue and Dusty, the Fan Man Hera.
All fellas with monkey sounds in there and called go.
The old like Danny Meringue pie.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080.
Yeah, this is going to be awesome.
The Fan.
It is a Monday, Danny and Dusty. No Dusty. I think he's still recovering from a 5K and other shenanigans.
Running is hard.
It is hard.
Yeah, I mean, you have to keep doing it like one foot after another.
No, don't like that. Those are the dulcet tones of one Luke Anderson filling in for Dusty here today. Jeff Russ behind the glass.
You know what I found? Running is hard, and my best way to deal with that, don't run.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't have to, I have chosen running over playing other sports just for pure injury sake. I've kind of gotten in the mode where I'm an old person.
Oh, yeah.
I run and I play golf. Those are the sports that I can do. My wife and I had this conversation years and years ago where I'm leaving to play City League basketball or softball, pick the sport.
Yeah.
And I noticed that every time I left the house, she'd go, "All right, don't get hurt.
Be careful."
Nope, just don't get hurt. It was every single time if I left to play golf or go for a run, she'd go, "Have a good run. Yeah. Have fun." And I'd be like, "You know, I'm going to stop. I'm paying.
Picking up what she's putting down.
Ooh, I'm going to stop paying these enrollment fees. I'm going to spend too much money on golf clubs." And mentally, I'm probably in a worse place, but physically, I am probably healthier for having made that choice.
So I took my first golf lesson a couple weeks ago. Everything was feeling really good. Dusty gave me much crap. And he's like, "The next game, you're going to go shoot a 105.
Played that well?
I had a text him this week, and 107, you bleepity bleepity bleep. I hope you are incredibly hungover from your time and on your run. I fell apart in a way that I could not imagine. And I discovered things that I never did wrong.
Yeah.
I do wrong now. And I'm like, what is happening?
Let me ask you this question. So you took your lesson when? 2 weeks ago on the calendar?
Yep.
How many practice swings did you take between your lesson and going and playing?
Went to the driving range twice.
Okay. So maybe a couple hundred balls?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not that.
Yeah,
that is just absolute poison for you. I just made a small correction with the way that I hold my feet and align my hands. Yeah. Oh, weird. That screws up all the things that you do. One little change new little thought seed.
Oh, dude.
It's just, that game is all mental.
It's so brutal, but I'm so committed to it now. And to your point of not playing other sports anymore, I told my wife a couple weeks ago, I'm done playing other sports. I'm not going to go play pickup. I might go grab the ball and go to the gym and shoot by myself, but I'm not playing.
Well, I'll tell you,
that's like heroin to me though. If I put the basketball shoes on and I get on the court, I'm like, I'm not gonna play, right?
Well, that's the danger. Get rid of all your basketball shoes. Yeah. I've been roped into two moderately competitive sporting events in the last few years, both by the same punk kid.
Mm.
Really good friends of ours have this son who is football, 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 football. He lives in the hills outside of Yosemite National Forest.
I thought you were gonna say Will Ortner.
No, no, it's not. No, ordinary. I could care less about this guy. No, this kid is like 13 years old, and he wants to play in the NFL. He wants to play Division I college football. And every time I see him, like, they came to visit us a few weeks ago, and he brought his football everywhere that we went. We went down to visit them last summer because Yosemite, beautiful.
Yeah.
And so we're staying with them. His backyard has the throwing net. He's got 6 footballs just laying around in all the places. He's like, all right, I'm going to go do sprints up the hill. And he would just do that. And he's waking up. He will not eat anything that is not protein shake. And he is just, he's fully committed. And because I have some loose affiliation with sports by doing this,
yeah,
he is just peppering me with questions. He's like, okay, so what do I need to do? What do I need to do? And I'm like, dude, you need to find some coaches that like you and can help you meet other coaches. And like, I go, I don't know the full path.
They need to understand this.
On your workout regimen, I've got no tips for you, but find somebody that really wants to put you under their arm and do that. So I give him that. So then the other advice that I gave him was, I go, stop playing wide receiver.
Yeah.
You play in the hills of middle California.
Yeah.
Nobody will ever see you because you will not have anybody that can throw you the ball. I go, go out for quarterback next year.
So go be the best athlete. You can transition from quarterback to wide receiver.
You can transition from quarterback to anything. Yeah. So that's what I told him. That was the advice that I gave him. So he goes into his 8th grade year and plays quarterback. And then the other thing that I said, because he goes, well, I'm not playing basketball anymore because I don't want... I go, no, play basketball. Yeah. And I gave him the Josh Allen blueprint, which was play all the sports, get good at all the sports. So play quarterback, he's playing basketball. When we were down there visiting, he talked me into playing a scrimmage game of football. We had 6 of us from 9 to mid-40s.
Oh, yeah.
And so we
play. Disaster.
And so he wants me guarding him. Mm-hmm. He wants the most competition he could possibly get. It all went fine until, like, I had a little stumble, caught myself with my hand on the ground, just put it in the turf. Couldn't let him know. Thumb got jammed just a little bit.
Couldn't show any weakness, though.
6 months later, thumb still hurting. So then they're out here to visit a few weeks ago, and he's like, can we play basketball? And my hamstring here now 3 or 4 weeks has still not recovered. So it's this is what I'm really worried about is my nephews are now 11 and 12. My daughters are getting into lacrosse, which doesn't seem like it'd be that much, but just chucking the thing around with them, they're starting to get more and more aggressive.
Oh, yeah.
So my kids will be the death of me. Hey, it's no longer – I've convinced myself that I don't need to be competitive, but when you've got a 13-year-old trying to whoop you at anything and they're –
it's established dominance.
They might not have any talent for what they're doing. They might not have anything. The one thing they got is energy on top of energy on top of energy. And when you see a kid every 8-12 months and he's grown another 6 inches, it's the whole thing. I just need to like call it an L and be done. But man, I'm hitting jumpers in his face. I got to keep going. Oh, now I got to play full court defense on this kid. It's
the competitive spirit. It's all of that. But I went out there and completely chunked it up, and I hate life. But now I'm gonna go to the range today after the show, and I'm gonna play again on Monday.
When do you see your instructor again?
I got to book another one out.
Okay.
So
that's the one you need to get on here because he'll be able to at least diagnose what you have. Get yourself like the video surveillance.
Oh, yeah. No, that's okay. I had him send me like the good and the bad videos.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, let me see. Because that was the thing is like when I started playing, it was all natural.
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
This is what feels normal. And some days it would go really well. Yeah. And some days it would go not so well. And I was like, I don't know where to go from here.
Well, I can imagine that you probably have a similar thing to that most of us have, which is when I worked at Skamania Lodge, they had the full course and driving range and everything. And so one of the assistant pros, every once in a while, just give me a tip. And he was always funny about it because he'd go, all right, that's going to ruin your next round of golf. And he would laugh about it or whatever. But the thing that he always said was, he goes, the problem is you're a good enough athlete that you can do most things wrong, but not see the results. And so as soon as your athleticism starts to flounder
wane.
A little bit,
wane
is a perfect word, then you can't make up those corrections when your hands are in the wrong place, your hips are in the wrong place, your shoulders are in the wrong place.
You can't just power
and
through
something.
And you can't
just make it up. So then you try to correct one little thing, and all of those things.
The whole kinetic chain goes to hell.
You can't do what you did. Oh. And then you
golf,
watch,
baby!
And it gets worse because you watch Scottie Scheffler, and he... his foot's not supposed to move like that in the back of his swing, and he's not supposed to do.
You watch Jim Furyk in his prime and just whip the club.
But Bryson DeChambeau's got this weird swing, but his clubs are all a different thing, and he can hit it 350 yards, but miss the fairway by 100 yards and still recover. And you go out there, and now you're turning one bad shot into eight bad shots. And
that was my day. If you saw somebody who looked a lot like me, who was very angry on the front nine at JLM Glen this weekend, that was indeed me.
Well, this is where I'm trying to get to. I'm not there, but golf is supposed to be fun.
It is.
So no matter how bad you play, no matter how good you play, if you just have to, you're not going to be great at golf.
No.
I'm sorry.
No.
At this point in your life. I don't think that you might get better.
Yeah.
But I played around and I was actually playing well. We're
shooting for 80s. That's what we're going for.
Start with staying in the 90s. Yeah. But we played at Bandon and I started the round. We played Trails and it was really nice. We were down there this January and the first five holes I was on the green in regulation. But the nice thing about playing at Bandon is the greens are enormous.
Yeah, no, you're
so hitting
a lot of
the
room.
Greens. But but when you three putt from 60 feet, you can't let that get angry. So I let my putting on those ruin the entire round.
Oh yeah.
And so after that, I told myself, I was like, no matter what happens, listen, I practice putting the least of anything that I do. So whatever I do, I'm not going to let them ruin the round. So we had one more round last day at Sheep Ranch, and I three or four putt the first two holes.
You're just like, oh,
and
my
I just
God.
Went, but no. Nope. I just want, you know what? Dude, look at this. I'm on the Oregon coast. We had really nice weather.
You didn't get the wind?
And the funny thing is, like, the winter wind is less consistent than the summer wind, and it goes the opposite direction. So the course, opposed to being hampered by it, actually helps you. So perfect day. And I was like, I'm just not going to let this ruin. And I didn't play well, but by the end, in our foursome on 18, I had a chance to win. And damn near got a hybrid to the green to give myself a birdie putt, and it just hit the edge and got buried in as deep a bunker as you can find.
That's about right.
But you know what? Like, I didn't let that bother me either. No. But that's where I'm trying to get to. It's just, listen, if I can't be good,
understanding what it is,
I might as well go out and have fun. So next time you get there, try to have fun, and you're 107. Automatically will turn into a 106, Danny, and you'll appreciate it. So just by changing your mentality, I can save you at least one stroke around.
Yeah,
so you're welcome.
There you go.
That's about all I can give you.
You know, and the great thing about golf is they always talk about the one shot that brings you back. Par the final three holes.
Oh, yep. There you go.
And I'm like, where was that to start the day? You know what I mean? It was just like,
it's in there somewhere.
It's like, come on, man.
But good luck finding it.
But I was. Do you ever hop in as a solo?
I've done it a few times. I don't do it a ton.
It's like one of the things about living in Newburgh. It's like it's me and obviously Joe Fisher who works here. We live within a couple blocks of each other, but I don't have a lot of friends out in Newburgh who golf. And so it's like, well, I either have to drive all the way out here and go play with everybody, or I do some solos out there. I got paired up with a guy who was a 2 handicap.
Yeah,
and playing with him, it's not frustrating.
Yeah,
but it's like, all right, dude.
Well, and you always want to play better when you're playing with somebody that's
good.
Striping
just
it.
An absolute stick. Yeah. And you're just like, and it got to the point where a couple times I'm like, I'm just going to keep this moving, man. Like, I'm not even going to bother trying to take the shot. I'm just going to take a drop. We're just going to.
If you can't play well, let's play fast.
Yep, that's exactly what I did. No. And that's kind of how it got. And we'll get in the PGA Championship that was not competitive really on Sunday because of everything that was taken care of on Saturday.
I'll tell you, Saturday, just watching most of the round and going, oh, Sunday's going to be great. And Scotty goes, nah.
We're not going to have that. Nah. What we can talk about is Scotty Scheffler the next guy who's going to be up there for a Grand Slam? We got to. You get half of it.
I like how you said that. Because the news cycle today is the same thing we always do. Is he the next Tiger?
No. But can he get a Grand Slam? Get a Grand Slam? Yep. And I think this weekend is kind of pretty telling in the sports world, because not only do you have Scottie Scheffler now getting half of the Grand Slam, we have the Final Four set, the conference finalists across the NBA.
Yes, please.
And you had a Game 7 that looked like it was going to live up to the hype, and then boy, did it fall off. And we get to evaluate one more team on what they're going to do this offseason. That's what we're going to start here. The Oklahoma City Thunder pick up their scars after a bad first quarter against a limping Nuggets team, but they will move on to take on the Minnesota Timberwolves in the Western Conference Finals. We'll revisit that game, what it means to the Nuggets, and then we'll dive into the NBA at large. Coming up here next on Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at bragworthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Coming out of this weekend's action, the Final Four in the NBA playoffs is set. The Western Conference Finals will feature the Oklahoma City Thunder, Minnesota Timberwolves, which we will get to here in a little bit. But how they got there, a Game 7 against the Denver Nuggets. And it did not, I don't think, go the way everybody expected it. We got news the day before the game that Aaron Gordon had suffered a grade 2 hamstring strain from Shamstrania. And I saw that and I went, you have got to be kidding me. Like, that's unreal that they picked up that injury at that point.
Out several weeks was the report the morning of the game.
Yeah.
And so, because I was flying back from San Diego, and I just do a quick scroll and look at all the things.
Before you hop on the plane, yeah.
And I go, man, Aaron Gordon out for the game is a big deal, because, and I'm sure we'll get into it, but the depth that the Denver Nuggets have is their biggest weakness. And Aaron Gordon does not get enough credit for how clutch he has been on both ends of the floor.
Two game winners in this playoffs alone, and a shot that forced overtime that they ended up winning.
And we don't talk about it enough, about how good he is and on both ends. Mm-hmm. Because especially on the defensive end, rebounding, everything.
How important he is to the Nuggets, but specifically.
Part of that is because of his athleticism.
Yeah.
And so for him to finish the game hobbling was one thing, and then for him to go out with that, and there was a play, third quarter, and I think Lou Dort was on him, and he just pulls out the chair, and he falls down, and the ball just bounces back to the other way. That's about the time I checked out of the game. Realizing that there's no better option than 75% of Aaron Gordon or 65% of Aaron Gordon and dwindling as the game goes on.
Still pretty good. And that was the thing is, like,
he was, but I don't know that he was pretty good. He wasn't bad. No. He just couldn't do so many
of the
hustle plays that, again, don't really show up. Yeah, statistically fine, but just the way that he impacts the game. And the funny thing about this roster, it's not all that different from the team that won the championships. The only thing that's really missing is that depth, that Bruce Brown and KCP.
Yeah.
Well, of course, and in that moment where you can really see the health, but you have a full Aaron Gordon, they win that game. They do what you saw Minnesota do last year, which is run out of gas in the Western Conference Finals. It's just a matter of when they were going to do it, and that injury ends up being dramatic. But then in my head, I'm just going, you got to have a better option than what we're seeing here.
And that's part of the
problem. And Russell Westbrook taking corner threes is always me going, that's your best shot.
Yeah, that's a win for you.
Yeah.
But, I mean, for Aaron Gordon to play in this game is insane.
Oh, he's a tough dude. There's no question.
Look, I mean, I got a lot of friends that cover the Nuggets. I got a lot of friends in the media and that work for the Nuggets over the years. And, you know, guys were telling Gordon not to play.
Oh, yeah.
Jokic publicly said, I told him not to play.
Yeah.
Like, it's a grade 2 hamstring. If that thing tears, he's out at least 6 months, probably 8 months.
Yep.
And you don't know what he kind of is as he gets a little bit older and after a devastating injury like that. For him to go out there and play was incredible in and of itself. For the Nuggets to start the game the way they did, a 21-10 lead, and you could just feel like it was Jared Allen. The lights were a little bit brighter than I expected. The Thunder looked scared, and then the Thunder found their groove.
But they also were – I mean, watching the way that they found their groove was just – fast breaks and off of turnovers.
37-7 points off turnovers. Yeah. The Nuggets, I mean, they're beat up. Like, it's not just Aaron Gordon playing. If you didn't see the game, Aaron Gordon had a leg sleeve on that was like the thickest sleeve I've ever seen in my life.
It was like toe to ribs. Yeah, it looked like he was just taped up on the entire left side of his body.
He was dragging that thing behind him, and yet he was leading them in rebounding. He finished the night. His box score, 8 points, 11 rebounds in 25 minutes, 2 of 4, 4 turnovers. The turnovers, he was not the only one. I mean, Christian Brown had 2, Murray had 2, Jokic had 5, Russell Westbrook had 4. I mean, they were just piling them up, and the Thunder were turning them into immediate points. But what was really interesting in the game is Gordon is limited. Obviously, Michael Porter Jr. is playing with one arm. Nobody else really showed up for the Nuggets, and that's, again, plays into the depth part of this. But the Thunder, in putting Alex Caruso on Jokic, and this is something we can talk about a little bit later, and how you're allowed to physically beat the living hell out of bigs in the NBA. It's why I'm always like, let strong guys be strong.
Yeah.
And people get mad, oh, Giannis just runs over people. I'm like, yeah. Do you know what that takes? Like, if it's such an easy thing to do, why isn't every big guy in the NBA just running over people? It's like, well, no, because he takes a physical punishment all game long, and yet he's still doing it night in, night out, over and over. Same thing with Jokic. You look at his arms at the end of the night.
Like, oh, they're just the scratches red blotches. Oh, yeah, you're not wrong. I mean, he's a blotchy dude anyways.
Yeah, but so. I mean, I get in that locker room for the Blazers during the season. You look at D.A. and you look at Donovan. You look at the guys that drive. They're just cut up, beat up. Yeah. Their feet are mangled. Their legs are beat up. And you're just like, yeah, but I mean, Caruso was so physical. And because they could sag in so much and overhelp and be creative with what they were doing defensively, they were able to disrupt them and get out and transition and pummel them. The question now is, have you seen enough from the Thunder to believe that they've earned their scars?
I mean, it's hard to say. You didn't get anything out of the Grizzlies series, right? There was really nothing to take from that, especially when Ja goes out. I mean, they had the lead in game 3, but that dissolves very quickly.
And you're tested here with 7 games, but were you tested to the point of, like, yes, you were technically pushed to the brink because you go to game 7.
Sure.
But you were facing, over the last couple games, kind of a shell of the Nuggets. In reality, when the Nuggets had that 8-point lead going into the fourth quarter of game 5, the series should have been over.
What it really felt like to me, though, as well, and when Caruso is on Jokic, first of all, he's picking him up at the 3-point line, and Jokic is allowing him to do that. So there's a couple times where he just drop step and would go to the basket, and then there's all that help, and he's still in heavy traffic. But what he never did was post up on the block.
Yeah,
it's
difficult to do.
Yeah, very,
because they're going to front him and then overload because
exactly right
in the weak side or strong side.
But the other thing too is they didn't have a set that they could call that would allow them to get it. So they literally have 4 out and 1 in because so much of the season Jokic is playing with the ball in his hand on the perimeter, and the way that they move the ball around, you have 4 guys in their spots on the 3-point line. When he drops down, there's no angle for any of those passes. There's a couple times that they got it in there, but there's no game plan for it.
They were willing to live with anybody else beating them.
Well, absolutely. But as that lead grew, then they had to start just launching threes, and they weren't going to win by getting 2 points at a time. So then they have to abandon that. But didn't it feel very much at some point during the maybe midway through the second or the third period, there was no head coach there? And I don't know if Adelman is, the guy moving forward. But this is a team that fired their head coach.
I'm pretty certain they're going to keep him long term.
It didn't feel – and again, maybe not even his fault because he hasn't had a runway for it. But there was no plan B. It was Jokic wins us this game. And then that started to fail. And then they're like, well, we better make some shots. They didn't make those. And they're like, cool. See ya. Thanks. Yeah,
I mean, that second quarter, the Thunder kind of figured out towards the end of the first quarter. In the second quarter, they go 39-20. And that was pretty much it at that point in time. And a big part of that is you've got Aaron Gordon, who's a shell of himself. Yep. You've got Michael Porter Jr. playing with one arm. You can't rely on Russell Westbrook. You can't put that much burden on Christian Brown. Jamal Murray had he wasn't playoff Murray in the sense of, like, a 50-point guy. Like, and that was the thing. You needed to have Jamal and Jokic in some combination of the 3 other guys.
Yeah.
Really bringing something, and I think it was just too big of an ask when you're talking about how shorthanded they are physically.
How many open threes did they miss?
I mean, the way they shot 10 of 45, didn't they?
I wonder how many of those were open, because they were getting those shots. There was nowhere for Jamal Murray to drive. There was nowhere for Jokic to set up inside, and they just didn't have an answer for it. So I don't know what, I mean, sometimes you'll
Murray and Brown are with 3 of 17 from 3.
Yeah.
I mean, you hit some threes, and then you stop, you know, maybe you're able to get some of that, and you stop them from getting out in transition, and maybe the game's a little bit tighter. But I mean, you really have to give it like OKC. They saw a wounded animal and said, okay, here's what we have, and here's how we're going to take care of things. And we talk about teams earning their scars. You can talk about the path that teams take and how they get there and who's hurt and who's not, but that's a big part of this. And as we kind of push forward here, we talk about the four teams now in the conference finals: the Timberwolves and the Nuggets and the Knicks and Pacers. The NBA is about to have their seventh champion in 7 years.
Yep.
Is the parody era here? We'll get to that next here on Danny and Dusty. But first, here's the big kahuna with the Sports Center update.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Question for our listeners: which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Has the parody era arrived to the NBA? That's the question that a lot of folks are talking about right now, as we are now headed towards the seventh different champion in 7 years. You have nobody in the bracket from last year's final, which automatically means you are not going to have a repeat
champion
title winner with the Celtics. In the world they're going, the Celtics are having their exit interviews today with Brad Stevens.
Oh, fun. Good times.
Yeah, talking about how all their decisions are going to be held on closer to the draft as they meet with stakeholders, i.e. the new ownership just paid $6.1 billion and just saw the franchise go up in flames with Jason Tatum's Achilles in a year, being out for a year in basketball, is going to be a bit prohibitive as they lean into the very expensive portion of the Celtics development.
Well, but if the other side of the conversation that's happening today, or mostly last week, I mean, if he's really hurt for all of next season, doesn't that mean they have to give him the NBA lottery?
I mean,
just give him a number one pick, as long as they don't waste it on James Wiseman or the equivalent. Isn't that
Cam Boozer, AJ DeBonzo, Darren Peterson, one of those guys ending up in Boston would just be a personal hell. That's the last thing I want to see happen.
I'm sorry, I thought that would bring joy to you. God, now you seem disappointed.
I want no part of that. But it is very interesting. One of the things that I have said over and over again is that, as much as superstars define eras, CBAs define eras, and team building and how these teams are structured is very interesting. When you talk about the Timberwolves, the Thunder, the Pacers, and the Knicks, they're all constructed very differently. Only one of them has a number one overall pick running their team in Anthony Edwards and the Timberwolves. And there's so many different pathways. And it's the thing is, you have to be creative about how you do it. And what's interesting among these four teams, only the Knicks have a title.
Yeah, in 1975, long time ago. Yeah. But even in this run of the 7 years of new champions, Milwaukee hadn't won since 73 or whatever it was. You have teams like Phoenix that popped up and played 1 year. One of the things that's really interesting is when you look at the standings and watch how teams seem to have the ability to go from the bottom to at least near the top, yeah, and vice versa. The Kings popped up and were a two seed.
Three seed.
The Rockets were right there, yeah, and playing the two seed this, yeah, year. You had Memphis, who was a two seed in 22 and 23, all the Ja Morant garbage, and, yep, they fall to the bottom, then get back up to the top. So the way that they can kind of ping pong back and forth, but then you have, you know, something like the Spurs winning the Wemby draft.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're going to be right back on top. No, it's been 3 years, yeah, and you know, it doesn't happen just like that. It's team building. The one thing that kind of has me laughing about the four teams that are left, mm-hmm, is the way that everybody talks about trades in the NBA as a zero-sum game. You win the trade, I lose the trade, I win the trade, mm-hmm, you lose the trade. Who won the Knicks Timberwolves trade this offseason?
Right now, it's a win-win.
Of course it is. And even letting Hartenstein go and be re-signed. Mm-hmm. I mean, the way that these teams are kind of interconnected,
oh, yeah,
is one of those things where it's like, yeah, you can let go of one of your franchise pillars, bring some guys back that are going to be a better fit for your team. Now, the Timberwolves are in the same spot they were last year, but, mm-hmm, it's certainly a win for the Knicks. So looking at this, but it also could have gone very sideways with any of these injuries or whatever else it is. Parity is looked at as everybody's got a chance to win. No, what it really means, it's just harder to win, which is more fun. The NBA playoffs from round one had, what, 7 of 8 compelling series, mm-hmm, at least on paper going into, sure, it. And looking at teams that have needed the scars you were just talking about with OKC, the Thunder and the Cavaliers were among the least experienced playoff teams sitting on both sides, the one seed on both sides. The Rockets were by far the least experienced. The only guys that had any playoff experience were Steven Adams, Dylan Brooks, and
Jeff Green.
And yeah. But Jeff Green's not a rotational player.
Van Vliet, yeah.
But yeah, Van Vliet is the other guy. But yeah, you look at it and you go, okay, well, we've got these new guys. Let's see what they do.
Yeah.
And watching the way that things go. So the parity thing is, I think, more accurate looking at the teams that haven't won, mm-hmm, but have bounced around, even more so than, like, if Boston won again this year, it doesn't mean that they're not parity. OKC and Cleveland, who had those picked as your top two seeds going into the season?
I think most people had at OKC,
but, for sure,
but Cleveland, no. Yeah. I obviously, you know, Boston.
And they're the number one overall seed.
When you win, yep, a title, you always think about, oh, you take your foot off the, yep, gas a little bit to make sure you're trying to go into the playoffs healthy. It's typically what happens when you're on your title defense. That's usually not the year that you see a team go, yep, for like 65 plus wins. It's, yep, you're like, hey, let's you know, it's great if we get the one seed, but let's make sure we get the, yep, healthy. If we get the two seed, we get the two seed. It's just like, it's about being there healthy. But it is interesting, though, when you look at how these teams are structured now and kind of what they have to work with. You know, the Knicks over the years, they go from a team that's kind of like, okay, what are they? And they make a move, and a big part of it is because Rick Brunson is a part of the coaching staff of the Knicks, but they go get Jalen Brunson after the Mavs kind of fumbled the bag. Not even kind of. They fumbled the bag when it came to giving Jalen Brunson an extension, and he's all of a sudden available.
Yeah. Well, I fumble the bag is a difficult thing, too. Are you going to have two guys that play essentially the same position as the pillars of your franchise? Then they go out and get Kyrie, who is, you know,
The same thing.
Yeah. But they also didn't.
And more expensive.
But they didn't pay it, but they're long term.
Yeah.
They don't have to pay those two guys that are on a similar timeline.
Sure.
Kyrie is much older than
But at
than
that
Luka.
Point in time, though, Jalen was a lot cheaper. Now he's got obviously a much bigger deal now with the Knicks. But
for sure. Yeah, he was. But the reason that they didn't sign him because he was going to be more expensive. And you can't really fault what the Mavericks did last year because they went to the Western, or they went, sure, to the championship for the Western Conference. So you go, okay, well, that seems like the right move. But
and then now everything else has followed since then.
Well, except for the other part that I brought up, which, yeah, is those magic ping pong balls, yes, that seemed that. Why don't they show them?
They did.
Okay,
they did.
You just have to go.
Yeah, they had the video, and we do have, you know, we had,
yeah, the pirated feed.
We had two local guys. We had Sean Hyken and Ben Galler were both in the room for that. So,
yeah.
But no, I mean, you look at what the Knicks have done. They've like that team is not homegrown.
Nope.
You know, they get Brunson in free agency. They trade for OG Anunoby. They trade for Mikal Bridges. Yep. They trade for Josh Hart. They trade for Kat. Like, that entire team is not homegrown. Meanwhile, look at the Indiana Pacers. Now, Halliburton's not homegrown. But they traded for him very early in his career, and they gave up a star big in Domantas Sabonis. And then they've got, you know, they make some moves on the Miles Turner, the guy who has eternally been linked to trade rumors. He's got 10 years now as a Pacer.
Every time I see him in there, too, as a productive Pacer, mm-hmm. too. But you surround him with guys like Halliburton and Pascal Siakam and Dwayne Naismith. And the way that these guys have all just gotten approved around him. Turns out it's good to have a really athletic center that can move up and down the court and just be a disruptor and not have to rely on him for everything. But when he had to be your centerpiece and your star, a little bit more difficult to
roles
do that. Not all guys are built to be that guy.
It is actually really interesting. Well, this felt like kind of the year of the big man and how disruptive they're going to be. The best big man of the four teams remaining is Karl-Anthony Towns.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose that it probably is. I mean, I don't know how you classify all the bigs because Oklahoma City.
Sure, they've got Chet, but, you know, as good as Chet is, Cat's a better player right now.
Sure, right, yeah, absolutely.
Like, Chet can continue to grow, and he's certainly more unique and more flexible in the things he can do.
Yeah.
But what I find to be really interesting, when we talk about this league being a wing-driven league, who's running every team?
Well, it's...
Jalen Brunson.
Yeah.
It's Ant Edwards.
Mm-hmm.
It's Tyrese Halliburton. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
You know what? These guys don't get it.
It's four guards.
And it's four. The other one, if you put Jokic in there, it's guys that pass the ball incredibly well. Yep. It's not somebody that plays ISO ball. And that's the fun thing about the wing and the Kobe Bryant and the Michael Jordan model, where it's like a guy that can just take over the game and you put the ball in his hand. The passing, like Tyrese Halliburton's vision is absolutely
insane. To me, he's the best passer in the league right now.
And Jalen Brunson can absolutely score, but man, when he drives to the basket,
he collapses an entire defense.
You better have your head on a swivel because that ball is being dropped off somewhere. Jokic is passing even as a big man, but you're right. I mean, it is guys that can get the ball into everybody else's hands with the opportunity to score the ball. Make life easier for the other guys on your team, and you will have team victories. What?
Look, I don't like what Adam Silver has done with a lot of things as it pertains to the NBA. The CBA is very prohibitive in a lot of senses, and the waxing and waning of physicality of the NBA.
I'll tell you, man, it's a whole different game watching the playoffs compared to watching the regular season.
And I hope it stays there.
Why not bring that to the regular season?
Well, no, this is the discussion we had last year too when they had it up, and it was like, where did this go? And they started the season, then they rolled it back. It's like, all right, let's just allow things to be physical. It makes the game better. We all know that now. But it's going to be very interesting, and we'll start talking about these games as we get underway tomorrow. Weirdly enough, the Western Conference Finals are going to start before the Eastern Conference Finals. Yet the Western Conference wrapped up yesterday.
I could never figure out how they decided the start of this series.
It should have been the other way around.
Yeah, but
now the Timberwolves have like 8 days off.
Yeah, but they don't want them to have too many days off, but the Thunder don't have enough days off, and they do this every single time they start. And when they're starting second round series before others have even culminated,
You got game one going, game six is going, another one.
Well, you have to have games on the weekend in primetime so people can watch them. Sure. Okay.
It's all very dumb.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of primetime games, we do have some mild breaking news in the world of college football. Could we be looking at the death of one of the biggest rivalries in the history of the sport? We'll get to that next here on Danny and Dusty, Tenney the Fan. Pat Forte of Sports Illustrated has a report just a couple hours ago that one of the biggest rivalries in college football history is in danger of, not happening anymore. He's reporting that USC and Notre Dame, while they are scheduled to play this year, October 18th, my birthday, happy birthday me, please win this year. But a rivalry that they have played 95 times in since 1924, there is no contract currently on the table that is agreed to by either USC or Notre Dame. USC is offering a one-year deal because they're playing in North Bend this year to come back to USC for 2026. Notre Dame wants a significantly longer one, and I think this is, when you look at this, this is USC looking at the landscape that they are in, currently number one in the Big Ten, which Notre Dame is not a part of. They are as much as they are at the big boy table, they are not. Their seat is it's a crown seat because they're going to get the first, you know, group of five kind of nod, like you're in this, but they're at the table, but they're not a natural member.
Yep.
In a sense. And I feel like USC is trying to leverage this into getting a better deal, getting a better situation while also kind of protecting their schedule pertaining to how the Big Ten and the SEC are looking to shake things up and how they're going to push basically some version of the top 40 teams in college football starting some other type of league.
Well, yes. And one of the things about college football that always throws me off is how obvious it is that everything is motivated by money.
Yes.
Wins equal dollars, mm-hmm. and advancing to whatever playoff format equals big dollars.
Which is why we're going to 16 teams.
It can go to 30 teams, yeah. and it wouldn't surprise me. I don't think it will, because they want to keep it limited enough. If it doesn't grow, it's also about money. Mm-hmm. If it does grow, it's definitely about money. But the reason they wanted to keep it at four as long as they did was because it became exclusive. This is kind of one of those. I just talked about how the trades in the NBA are not zero sum. This is very much a, we want to win and we want you not to win. We want to make sure that the SEC and the Big Ten have power. And the reason that they were able to escalate the timeline for the 12-team playoff is because the Big Ten and the SEC had basically shoved everybody else out. They'll let teams like Boise State and Arizona State hang around and host games this year. I think they liked the fact that they didn't look like they belonged when it really came down to the on-the-field play, because then everybody can go out and have this upheaval going, well, you can't have Boise State hosting these games and being a team that actually gets to go and be the bye team mm-hmm. in this scenario. And they go, yeah, you're probably right. I mean, that wasn't our idea, but, I think maybe we should just have more games. They definitely didn't want the games to be on their campuses, yeah. for sure. But having them get that automatic bid into the big bowl games mm-hmm. was 100% part of the plan. They're like, if they win, that'd be the worst case scenario. If Boise State were to hold on and make it to the championship game, then they would
all of a sudden they're going, uh-oh.
It would have been a miscalculation, but they had confidence that
somewhere
depth,
along the way,
depth matters yeah. in college football. When we used to cover high school football, one of the stats that I came across was pretty telling about this, and you can apply it very easily to college football. The number one predictor of high school football success is roster size. If you show up to a high school football game and there are more kids on one sideline than the other, the side with more players will win like 95% of the time.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, there is a kid that just elevates his team beyond, and he's playing quarterback and he's doing whatever. But those stories come up all over the country because there's thousands of games being played at the state level and all of this every year that are big time games. But it really does boil down to look at the roster size and look at the depth that you have available to you. Because we would cover both Oregon and Southwest Washington. Mm-hmm. I'm a Vancouver kid. As a favor to Jeff Austin, I offered to go out and do the high school sidelines for Clark County. Mm-hmm. It was so much fun to do. I ended up doing it for years. We got to broadcast the state championship game from the Tacoma Dome. They used to do all six games mm-hmm. in 2 days. Absolute blast.
The same way we used to kind of do it here at 16.
Well, we would do it. We go in two different yeah. directions, but we would use 9-10 for one, and we would use the fan for mm-hmm. the other. So before COVID, we were covering all of these games. We had both a 4A champion from Clark County, and we had a 2A champion from Clark County. Hawkinson won back-to-back mm-hmm. At 2A, and Union won at 4A. The biggest roster sizes were 3A,
yeah.
where we're watching G. Scott and JT and all of Emeka Mbuka that are yeah. playing for these different teams or whatever. But the O'Day versus Eastside Catholic private oh, yeah. school matchups, not only were their roster sizes bigger, the individual people's.
The
list of 300
back in the day, they would literally roll 110 guys out
sure.
off the bus.
Exactly.
And at Beaverton, we were the biggest school in the state and when I was in high school. And even then, we were like, we were like 85, 90. We had a huge roster.
Sure.
And they'd run like, because of Jesuit, you have to do some extracurriculars. So they throw them on the football and team and just roll yeah. a massive roster out.
But you can do the same thing with college football. Yeah. You can look at it when they've got the money to do it and the amount of red shirts and the expansion of the roster sizes are
it's going to be interesting to see where that
way,
lands.
But it's way better for the haves than the have-nots.
Oh, certainly.
When your best three signees are three stars mm-hmm. that you can hope can turn into something, and you end up getting a couple stars out of it. You get a Ashton Jenty who yeah. just goes out and runs wild over college football.
Or in the old version, you get a Jared Zabransky.
Sure. There are guys that can be had. There's yep. there's late bloomers and there's all of those things. But if you, like, I remember when Oregon was starting to sign five stars with Mario Cristobal mm-hmm. and how big of a deal it was. They're like, five star Kayvon Thibodeau yeah. going to play for University of Oregon. At that same time, when Clemson was going to back-to-back-to-back championships and do the playoff every yep. single year, in the same time period, they'd signed 8 5 stars.
Yeah, you're like, oh, there's a difference.
Yeah, well, and it's not getting that one guy that could live up to all his potential. Let's get 8 of them in case one of them lives up to their potential, and then we'll do that.
And that's how you get Deshaun Watson and Sammy Watkins.
Yeah,
it's and Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, and again and again and again. You want to keep listening? I'll just say. That's how you know what it is. That's how you get to it where you have a team sitting there in the fourth quarter, and you have a guy like Scataboo who is just one of the most entertaining singular efforts I've ever seen in college football. And the guy is dying with cramps on the sideline, and they're trying to get him fluids and trying to get him back out there in every situation they possibly can. Mm-hmm. I'm waiting for him to go in at free safety and start kicking extra points. And you just go, it's great. And everybody on the Arizona State side is just sucking wind as hard as they can. And they're like, all right, they're going to put in some 5-star backups that haven't really played all year. And the halves, pick your team and pick the year, are sitting in that are looking fresh. Cincinnati, Alabama.
Yeah.
Dude, they didn't. They just sat on little brother's head and tapped his forehead until he said uncle.
Yeah.
But when you have waves of guys that you can put in there, I mean, it's unfair. And those teams like it that way because their campuses look better. Their student enrollment outside of their athletic programs make them a ton of money. And all of these things that build into it. Let's just win football games and everything else will take care of itself. And then in turn, what does your administration do? Everything they can to make sure you win football games.
Exactly. It's one cycle. As it pertains to USC Notre Dame here, obviously I'm very biased in this. And as much as I hate Notre Dame, and apparently I said North Bend earlier because I'm an idiot, South Bend.
So
shout out the text line. When you talk for a living, sometimes you just say things wrong. Yes, yeah. The text line's like, well, it's cool.
Not near Coos Bay.
They moved the entire Oregon coast to Indiana. Good job. I as much as I hate Notre Dame, I want to see that rivalry continue. Notre Dame did just sign a 12-year deal with Clemson because they are a non-football member of the ACC, but they do play 5 ACC games, of which Clemson will account for at least one. So they'll play 4 different opponents from the ACC cycling through. They need to find a way to keep this going.
Well,
it's the same with Oregon State. Like I don't care. Like those rivalries need to be protected at that
level. But if you're USC, What advantage do you get to play Notre Dame in the non-conference every time? I know you want to see it keep going.
Yeah, because it is because for Notre Dame, it means more. That's why Notre Dame wants to keep this going because their schedule sucks. Like, full stop, their schedule sucks every single year. It's always just littered with cupcakes, and they have USC, usually middle of the year, and then they'll maybe play one other top 25 team that will somehow make their resume look a little bit better.
Notre Dame plays hockey in the Big Ten, so they have a relationship there too. If they wanted to join the Big Ten, I'm sure they'd be welcomed with open arms, but the reason they don't want to do that...
because they want to protect themselves.
They don't want to play a championship game. They don't want to do that. Last year's a perfect example. They lose to Northern Illinois.
And you're like, what?
And they if they can make it through the rest of their schedule, which... no offense to USC, is fairly soft. Mm-hmm. They can still roll through and get into the tournament, so they feel like they have a bid. But this is all just jockeying.
Literally, they were in a national title game last year because of it. Because
of course,
they aren't having to play 8 games a season where you're like, that's a tough game.
How did the SEC build their dynasties?
Playing cupcakes around the outside.
No, that's the best part, is they paid cupcakes right in the middle.
Yeah.
Pre-rivalry game. And we would sit here in the Pac-10 country and Pac-12 country and just be like, that's not fair. We're playing 9 games. Whose fault is that? Before their rivalry game, they're playing who? You could schedule Portland State before you play your rivalry game going into it.
That's why they have
it.
Chattanooga every year.
And you look up and down the schedule and we all kind of laugh, but what the SEC does is they play an early game that matters outside of the conference that if they win, they can put it on cruise control, but they'd much rather lose in August or September than they would in November before they get into those final few games of the season. And they built them in. And if you're USC... and you can eliminate a opponent that is on at least on caliber with any Big Ten opponent in Notre Dame, probably a win-win. And I know you've been a USC fan your whole life.
Yep.
They don't care about you.
And
do you think I'm wrong?
No. I mean,
that's what really
stinks. Yeah, no. And it's again, this is not just a rivalry. It's when you think of college football, it's Michigan, Ohio State, USC, Notre Dame, that's the Alabama, Auburn, like those are the traditional, longest-running, most impactful rivalries in college football. I mean, you look at how many times Notre Dame-USC was a game was an indicator for a national title. Like that's, and yes, I know we're going back further, but like that's the point, is that this is a rivalry that's been going on for over 100 years. and for that to fall to the wayside for money, like that. That bothers me.
I don't disagree with you, and I'm not trying to take the side that they should do it. I'm just looking at it from the perspective of your cash engine.
Yeah.
Well, and now with NIL and with this expanded playoff, I mean, the fact that the network actually runs the playoff.
Mm-hmm.
The playoff is owned by the TV network for football.
It's owned by basketball.
It's
a monetary engine.
But at least the NCAA runs the tournament in basketball, and they make all the money from CBS and True
TV.
Both those tournaments,
both the college football playoff and the NCAA tournament, they're going to be very, very different in the next decade.
And
the NCAA will probably not have any hand in either of those things going forward, which... is unfortunate in some sense, but it also makes the game better in another. So,
do you think if they go to that top 40 league, it ends up being a net positive for college football as a fan or a net negative?
I think it's a net positive.
Yeah, I kind of do too. I mean, we're on the side of big cash. Yeah, and it
undercuts the lesser programs, and I don't want to see that. And like. That's why I've been a big advocate for the promotion relegation. So you keep the churn and you keep that next group interested and have. It's not just stick. There's carrot too.
Can somebody drag out that old Crystal football? The college football playoff trophy is
the BCS
terrible.
Title. Yeah.
Well, that was the national championship trophy. That was the AP national championship trophy. That's got to be somewhere. But if you played at Boise State and you got to play for that and you got to play against entertaining television, because the idea that everybody goes, well, if you have a top 40, everything else is going to disappear. Pretty sure people like watching football. What do they call it? Sports betting likes college football a fair amount, and you're telling me they can't put some money on Memphis against Nevada in the
middle of
October?
The only one they don't want is the UFL. Otherwise, everybody's all in.
Fairness, nobody wants any of that. They just, even the uniforms. We were flipping through the channels going, what channel's the PGA Championship on? And we went through, and it was UFL. And it's like my eyes are allergic to the uniform combinations.
There's some things happening there.
They kind of had their own Heidi moment over the weekend, too.
Oh, did they?
The last couple minutes of one of their games, got switched from ABC over to ESPN2 so they could start the pregame. The NBA pregame.
You know what's funny is, like, it's at least half a dozen times it feels like in the last 8 months I've had to explain the Heidi Bowl, and which is one of the funnier things to me in all of sports. But telling that story is immensely fun. But I'm watching the end of Pacers-Cavs game 4. Was that the one? It was basically over. I mean, 6 minutes left. They've got like a 12-point lead, whatever it is. And I go, Heidi Bowl. I don't know. I don't get the reference. And so I had to explain to everybody in the room. And then he's giving me 9-1 odds that the Pacers won't come back and win on the thing.
There you go.
I did not take the bet. I go, I'm not saying that they will win. But the reason we watch games, like the one thing that I'll never get is a mass exodus. It's when your team is losing. The only way they would win if it was amazing. Isn't that the reason you want to be there?
Yeah, like
you go to the game in case something amazing happens. And the only way it happens amazing is it has to go wrong for a while before it goes right.
Yeah. Chris Vernon, who covers the Memphis Grizzlies, that does the Grind City Media down there, he had a line that I truly love. He goes, the great thing about going to NBA games is there is a chance that every single time you walk in the building, you can see something that's never happened before.
Yeah.
And if you look around, even during the regular season, you can see the absolutely incredible on any given night. Damian Lillard scored 71 points against the Houston Rockets on a night that just didn't matter. And that was a night that will forever be burned into my head.
Yeah.
And that's like the whole point. Like you have to be there. You know, it's funny, you know, the Miami Heat with their big comeback finals where 90% of the building left. It's funny how you hear so many Heat fans, I was at the game. Like, no, you weren't. You all left.
Yeah. You know what? I was watching the highlights. I see you walking out in the middle of the third.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's always the funniest thing to me in fandom. You'd much rather beat traffic. And if you talk to enough people, you'll find somebody that was listening to it in the radio as they were pulling out of Autzen or the Moda Center or
wherever.
When that thing happened, and it was so great. But that's
sports.
That's the fun of it, unless it's a UFL.
There you go.
Okay.
All right, coming next up, we've talked around it a ton, but the PGA Championship concluded on Sunday, but it was over on Saturday. But the interesting thing coming out of it, obviously, is Scottie Scheffler now has half the Grand Slam. Is he the next guy in line, and can he potentially get it done? We'll get to that next here on Danny and Dusty, 10 of the Fan.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company, from America for America.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.